The Story of a Soul by St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Chapter 11, Part 2. As for me, in spite of all I have written, I have not as yet begun. I see so many beautiful horizons, such infinitely varied tints, that the palette of the divine painter will alone, after the darkness of this life, be able to supply me with the colors wherewith I may portray the wonders that my soul can make out. Since, however, you have expressed a desire to penetrate into the hidden sanctuary of my heart, and to have in writing what was the most consoling dream of my life, I will end this story of my soul by an act of obedience. If you will allow me, it is to Jesus I will address myself, for in this way I shall speak more easily. You may find my expressions somewhat exaggerated, but I assure you there is no exaggeration in my heart. There all is calm and peace. O my Jesus, who can say how tenderly and gently thou dost lead my soul? The storm had raged there ever since Easter, the glorious feast of thy triumph, until in the month of May there shone through the darkness of my night one bright ray of grace. My mind dwelt on mysterious dreams sent sometimes to thy favored ones, and I thought how such a consolation was not to be mine, that for me it was night, always the dark night. And in the midst of the storm I fell asleep. The following day, May 10th, just at dawn, I dreamt that I was walking in a gallery alone with our mother. Suddenly, without knowing how they had entered, I saw three Carmelites in mantles and long veils, and I knew that they came from heaven. Ah, I thought, how glad I should be if I could but look on the face of one of these Carmelites. And, as if my wish had been heard, I saw the tallest of the three saints advance toward me. An inexpressible joy took possession of me as she raised her veil and then covered me with it. At once I recognized our venerable mother, Anne of Jesus, foundress of the Carmel in France. Her face was beautiful with an unearthly beauty. No rays came from it, and yet, in spite of the thick veil which enveloped us, I could see it suffused by a soft light, which seemed to emanate from her heavenly countenance. She caressed me tenderly, and seeing myself the object of such affection, I made bold to say, "Dear mother, I entreat you, tell me, will our Lord leave me much longer in this world? Will he not soon come to fetch me?" She smiled sweetly and answered, "Yes, soon, very soon, I promise you." "Dear mother," I asked again, "tell me, if he does not want more from me than these poor little acts and desires that I offer him, is he pleased with me?" Then our venerable mother's face shone with a new splendor, and her expression became even more gracious. "The good God asks no more of you," she said. "He is pleased, quite pleased. and taking my head between her hands, she kissed me so tenderly that it would be impossible to describe the joy I felt. My heart was overflowing with gladness, and remembering my sisters, I was about to beseech some favor for them when, alas, I awoke. My happiness was too great for words. Many months have passed since I had this wonderful dream, and yet its memory is as fresh and delightful as ever. I can still picture the loving smiles of this holy Carmelite, and feel her fond caresses. O Jesus, thou didst command the winds and the storm, and there came a great calm. On waking, I realized that heaven does indeed exist, and that this heaven is peopled with souls who cherish me as their child. And this impression still remains with me, all the sweeter, because up to that time I had but little devotion to the venerable Mother Anne of Jesus. I had never sought her help, and but rarely had heard her name. And now I know and understand how constantly I was in her thoughts, and the knowledge adds to my love for her and for all the dear ones in my father's home. Oh, my beloved, this was but the prelude of graces yet greater, which thou didst desire to heap upon me. Let me remind you of them today, and forgive my folly if I venture to tell thee once more of my hopes and my heart's well-nigh infinite longings. Forgive me, and grant my desire, that it may be well with my soul. To be thy spouse, O my Jesus, to be a daughter of Carmel, and by my union with thee to be the mother of souls, should not all this content me? And yet other vocations make themselves felt. I feel called to the priesthood and to the apostolate. I would be a martyr, a doctor of the church. I should like to accomplish the most heroic deeds. The spirit of the crusader burns within me, and I long to die on the field of battle in defense of Holy Church. The vocation of a priest. With what love, my Jesus, would I bear thee in my hand when my words brought thee down from heaven? With what love would I give thee to souls? And yet, while longing to be a priest, I admire and envy the humility of Saint Francis of Assisi, and am drawn to imitate him by refusing the sublime dignity of the priesthood. How reconcile these opposite tendencies? Like the prophets and doctors, I would be a light unto souls. I would travel to every land to preach thy name, O my beloved, and raise on heathen soil the glorious standard of thy cross. One mission alone would not satisfy my longings. I would spread the gospel to the ends of the earth, even to the most distant isles. I would be a missionary, not only for a few years, but, were it possible, from the beginning of the world till the end of time. Above all, I thirst for the martyr's crown. It was the desire of my earliest days, and the desire has deepened with the years passed in the Carmel's narrow cell. But this too is folly, since I do not sigh for one torment. I need them all to slake my thirst. Like thee, O adorable spouse, I would be scourged. I would be crucified. I would be flayed like Saint Bartholomew, plunged into boiling oil like Saint John, or, like Saint Ignatius of Antioch, ground by the teeth of wild beasts into a bread worthy of God. With Saint Agnes and Saint Cecilia, I would offer my neck to the sword of the executioner. And, like Joan of Arc, I would murmur the name of Jesus at the stake. My heart thrills at the thought of the frightful tortures Christians are to suffer at the time of Antichrist, and I long to undergo them all. Open, O Jesus, the book of life, in which are written the deeds of thy saints. All the deeds told in that book I long to have accomplished for thee. To such folly as this, what answer wilt thou make? Is there on the face of this earth a soul more feeble than mine? And yet, precisely because I am weak, it has delighted thee to accede to my least and most childlike desires. And today, it is thy good pleasure to realize those other desires, more vast than the universe. These aspirations becoming a true martyrdom, I opened one day the epistles of St. Paul to seek relief in my suffering. My eyes fell on the 12th and 13th chapters of the first epistle to the Corinthians. I read that all cannot become apostles, prophets, and doctors, that the church is composed of different members, that the eye cannot also be the hand. The answer was clear, but it did not fulfill my desires or give to me the peace I sought. Then, descending into the depths of my nothingness, I was so lifted up that I reached my aim. Without being discouraged, I read on, and found comfort in this counsel: Be zealous for the better gifts, and I show unto you a yet more excellent way. The apostle then explains how all perfect gifts are nothing without love, that charity is the most excellent way of going surely to God. At last I had found rest. Meditating on the mystical body of Holy Church, I could not recognize myself among any of its members as described by St. Paul. Or was it not rather that I wished to recognize myself in all? Charity provided me with the key to my vocation. I understood that since the church is a body composed of different body parts, the noblest and most important of all the organs would not be wanting. I knew that the church has a heart, that this heart burns with love, and that it is love alone which gives life to its members. I knew that if this love were extinguished, the apostles would no longer preach the gospel, and the martyrs would refuse to shed their blood. I understood that love embraces all vocations, that it is all things, and that it reaches out through all the ages and to the uttermost limits of the earth, because it is eternal. Then, beside myself with joy, I cried out, O Jesus, my love, at last I have found my vocation. My vocation is love. Yes, I have found my place in the bosom of the church, and this place, O my God, thou hast thyself given to me. In the heart of the church, my mother, I will be love. Thus I shall be all things. Thus will my dream be realized. Why do I say I am beside myself with joy? This does not convey my thought. Rather, it is peace which has become my portion. The calm peace of the sailor when he catches sight of the beacon which lights him to port. Oh, luminous beacon of love! I know how to come even unto thee. I have found the means of borrowing thy fires. I am but a weak and helpless child, yet it is my very weakness which makes me dare to offer myself, O Jesus, as victim to thy love. In olden days, pure and spotless holocausts alone were acceptable to the omnipotent God. Nor could his justice be appeased save by the most perfect sacrifices. But the law of fear has given place to the law of love, and love has chosen me, a weak and imperfect creature, as its victim. Is not such a choice worthy of God's love? Yea, for in order that love may be fully satisfied, it must stoop even unto nothingness, and must transform that nothingness into fire. Oh, my God, I know it. Love is repaid by love alone. Therefore, I have sought, I have found, how to ease my heart by rendering love for love. Use the riches that make men unjust to find you friends who may receive you into everlasting dwellings. This, O Lord, is the advice thou gave to thy disciples after complaining that the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light. Child of light as I am, I understood that my desires to be all things and to embrace all vocations were riches that might well make me unjust. So I set to work to use them for the making of friends. Mindful of the prayer of Elisha when he asked the prophet Elias for his double spirit, I presented myself before the company of the angels and saints and addressed them thus: I am the least of creatures. I know my mean estate. But I know that noble and generous hearts love to do good. Therefore, O blessed inhabitants of the celestial city, I entreat you to adopt me as your child. All the glory that you helped me to acquire will be yours. Only deign to hear my prayer, and obtain for me a double portion of the love of God. Oh, my God! I cannot measure the extent of my request. I should fear to be crushed by the weight of its audacity. My only excuse is my claim to childhood, and that children do not grasp the full meaning of their words. Yet, if a father or mother were on the throne and possessed vast treasures, they would not hesitate to grant the desires of those little ones, more dear to them than life itself. To give them pleasure, they will stoop even unto folly. Well, I am a child of Holy Church, and the Church is a queen, because she is now espoused to the divine King of Kings. I ask not for riches or glory, not even the glory of heaven. That belongs by right to my brothers, the angels and saints. And my own glory shall be the radiance that streams from the queenly brow of my mother, the Church. Nay, I ask for love. To love thee, Jesus, is now my only desire. Great deeds are not for me. I cannot preach the gospel or shed my blood. No matter. My brothers work in my stead, and I, a little child, stay close to the throne and love thee for all who are in the strife. But how shall I show my love, since love proves itself by deeds? Well, the little child will strew flowers. She will embrace the divine throne with their fragrance. She will sing love's canticle in silvery tones. Yes, my beloved, it is thus my short life shall be spent in thy sight. The only way I have of proving my love is to strew flowers before thee. That is to say, I will let no tiny sacrifice pass, no look, no word. I wish to profit by the smallest actions, and to do them for love. I wish to suffer for love's sake, and for love's sake even to rejoice. Thus shall I strew flowers. Not one shall I find without scattering its petals before thee. And I will sing always, even if my roses must be gathered from amid thorns. And the longer and sharper the thorns, the sweeter shall be my song. But of what avail to thee, my Jesus, are my flowers and my songs? I know it well, this fragrant shower, these delicate petals of little price, these songs of love from a poor heart like mine, will nevertheless be pleasing unto thee. Trifles they are, but thou wilt smile upon them. The church triumphant, stooping toward her child, will gather up these scattered rose petals, and placing them in thy divine hands, there to acquire an infinite value, will shower them upon the church suffering to extinguish its flames, and on the church militant to obtain its victory. Oh, my Jesus, I love thee. I love my mother, the church. I bear in mind that the least act of pure love is of more value to her than all other works together. But is this pure love really in my heart? Are not my boundless desires just dreams, just foolishness? If this be so, I beseech thee to enlighten me. Thou knowest I seek only the truth. If my desires be rash, then deliver me from them, and from this most grievous of all martyrdoms. And yet, I confess, if I do not reach those heights to which my soul aspires, this very martyrdom, this foolishness, will have been sweeter to me than eternal bliss will be. Unless by a miracle thou shouldst take from me all memory of the hopes I entertained upon earth. Jesus, Jesus, if the mere desire of thy love awakens such delight, what will it be to possess it, to enjoy it forever? How can a soul so imperfect as mine aspire to the plenitude of love? What is the key of this mystery? Oh, my only friend, why dost thou not reserve these infinite longings to lofty souls, to the eagles that soar in the heights? Alas, I am but a poor little unfledged bird. I am not an eagle. I have but the eagle's eyes and heart. Yet, notwithstanding my exceeding littleness, I dare to gaze upon the divine Son of Love, and I burn to dart upwards to him. I would fly, I would imitate the eagles. But all that I can do is lift up my little wings. It is beyond my feeble power to soar. What is to become of me? Must I die of sorrow because of my helplessness? Oh no, I will not even grieve. With daring self-abandonment, I will remain there until death, my gaze fixed upon that divine sun. Nothing shall frighten me, neither wind nor rain. And should impenetrable clouds conceal the orb of love, and should I seem to believe that beyond this life there is only darkness, that would be the hour of perfect joy, the hour in which to push my confidence to its uttermost bounds. I should not dare to detach my gaze, knowing well that beyond the dark clouds the sweet sun still shines. So far, O my God, I understand thy love for me. But thou knowest how often I forget this, my only care. I stray from thy side, and my scarcely fledged wings become bedraggled in the muddy pools of earth. Then I lament like a young swallow, and my lament tells thee all. And I remember, O infinite mercy, that thou didst not come to call the just, but sinners. Yet, shouldst thou still be deaf to the plaintive cries of thy feeble creature, shouldst thou still be veiled, then I am content to remain, benumbed with cold, my wings bedraggled. And once more I rejoice in this well-deserved suffering. O sun, my only love, I am happy to feel myself so small, so frail in thy sunshine, and I am in peace. I know that all the eagles of thy celestial court have pity on me. They guard and defend me. They put to flight the vultures, the demons that fain would devour me. I do not fear them, these demons. I am not destined to be their prey, but the prey of the divine eagle. O eternal Word, O my Saviour, thou art the divine eagle whom I love, who lurest me. Thou, who descending to this land of exile, didst will to suffer and to die, in order to bear away the souls of men, and plunge them into the very heart of the Blessed Trinity, love's eternal home. Thou, who, reascending into inaccessible light, dost still remain concealed here in our vale of tears, under the snow-white semblance of the host. And this, to nourish me with thine own substance. O Jesus, forgive me if I tell thee that thy love reacheth even unto folly. And in the face of this folly, what would thou have me do but that my heart leap up to thee? How could my trust have any limits? I know that the saints have made themselves as fools for thy sake. Being eagles, they have done great things. I am too little for great things, and my folly it is to hope that thy love accepts me as victim. My folly it is to count on the aid of angels and saints, in order that I may fly unto thee with thine own wings, O my divine eagle. For as long a time as thou willest, I shall remain, my eyes fixed upon thee. I long to be allured by thy divine eyes. I would become love's prey. I have the hope that thou wilt one day stoop down upon me, and bearing me away to the source of all love, thou wilt plunge me at last into that glowing abyss, that I may become forever its happy victim. O Jesus, would that I could tell all little souls of thine ineffable condescension. I feel that if by any possibility thou couldst find one weaker than my own, thou wouldst take delight in loading her with still greater favors, provided that she abandoned herself with entire confidence to thine infinite mercy. But, O my spouse, why these desires of mine to make known the secrets of thy love? Is it not thyself alone who hast taught them to me? And canst thou not unveil them to others? Yes, I know it, and for this I implore thee, I entreat thee, to let thy divine eyes rest upon a vast number of little souls. I entreat thee to choose in this world a legion of little victims of thy love. Notes. The Venerable Mother Anne of Jesus, in the world, Anne of Lobera, was born in Spain in 1545. She entered the Carmelite order in 1570, in the first convent of St. Joseph of Avila, and shortly afterwards became the counselor and coadjutor of St. Teresa, who called her her daughter and her crown. St. John of the Cross, who was her spiritual director for 14 years, described her as a seraph incarnate, and her prudence and sanctity were held in such esteem that the most learned men consulted her in their doubts, and accepted her answers as oracles. She was always faithful to the spirit of St. Teresa, and had received from heaven the mission to restore the Carmel to its primitive perfection. Having founded 3 convents of the Reform in Spain, she established one in France and another in Belgium. She died in the odor of sanctity in the Carmel of Brussels on March 4, 1621. On May 3, 1878, His Holiness Pope Leo XIII signed the decree introducing the cause of her beatification. End of chapter 11.